Hey everyone, Dave here to let you know that Do Go On is coming to Sydney for a live podcast on Saturday, July 13, 2024, 3 p.m. at the fabulous Ritz Cinemas in Randwick. We'll be there, you can grab popcorn, you can get a choc top. We only come up there every couple of years, so we hope to see you there. If you want to get tickets for Saturday, July 13, go to dogoonpod.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnocky, and as always, I'm here with Jess Perkins and Matt Stewart.
I'm Jess Perkins.
I'm Matt Stewart, and just thinking about being here with you two, feeling so good every time Dave goes, welcome or whatever.
Yeah.
I forget what he says, but I love it, that iconic thing he says at the start. I just think how good is it to be alive.
Yeah.
That's what my brain says.
Yes.
I don't always say it out loud, but I always think it. I feel so good to be alive. I'm asking it rhetorically. It is great to be alive.
Wow. I have nothing to add.
Okay. Nothing to add. Fantastic.
Hey, Dave,
other than I wish I was never born.
Oh.
But apart from that.
Apart from that, nothing.
Well, I mean, what a great mindset to be in to explain the show.
Thank you. So, hello. It's Jess again. And
but you will say that at the start of every time we speak.
Yeah.
Dave here, by the way. Should have said that.
Sorry, I'm going to put your mother on. Jess?
I'm your mother. Have you been eating vegetables? You know, mum stuff.
Yeah, have you been eating vegetables?
Definitely
anyway,
not.
Anyway, how this show works is one of the three of us goes away, researches a topic, usually suggested to us by our wonderful listeners. They learn all about it. They absorb it. They bathe in it. And they come back. They tell the other two about it, who never interrupt and who are very polite and kind to one another. And we always get onto the topic with a question. Now, Matt, it is your turn to do a report. What is your motherfucking question?
Whoa.
My question is, who am I?
Ooh, I love a who am I.
Ooh. I was born in New York City in the year 1950.
Okay, 1950, New York City. Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. Donald Duck.
74, I have sold over 30 million records worldwide.
Ooh.
Okay, musician, 74. 74, okay, yes.
My birth name, and you can buzz in at any time.
Yep.
My birth name is Hugh Craig the Third.
That was my buzz.
Yes? That's a terrible buzz.
Sorry.
It was like, it was unpleasant to listen to, is
well,
what
it
I
was
mean.
Even more unpleasant to do.
I can imagine. Your throat must feel
yeah,
awful.
God.
But sorry, yeah, go on, answer.
Sorry,
I guess.
Where was I?
Oh, God.
Hugh Craig the Third. I think that might be a man known as Huey Lewis.
Correct.
Oh.
Which I know. Matt has been very keen to report on for a long time, and I am so happy that day has finally come.
Free choice came up. I was actually after a show during the comedy festival, talking to one of our great Patreons, Sophie Waldron, and I was saying, I was throwing out some facts about, I don't know why it came up, maybe the bar rat played a song, and I'm throwing out some facts about it. I'm like, I really would have loved to have done an episode on, but I just don't think anyone gives a shit. And she's like, no, this from what you're saying, that's what an interesting life. I think it'd be a great episode.
Okay.
So I said, all right, Soph.
So a lot riding on Soph's shoulders
yeah,
right now.
That's Sophie.
And she keeps breaking those arms. So,
yeah, we'll quickly explain that.
Oh, yeah, well, she was in the UK last year. She had a fall and broke her arm. And then just last week at the time of recording, was hit by a car. She said, I made getting hit by a car sound really fun. She thought she'd give it a go. She got hit by a car, had the exact same break on the other arm. First arm, not fully healed. Second arm now broken.
That's a bad run.
Yeah. So, I just want to go on the record and say getting hit by a car is not fun, and I'm sorry I've made it sound really exciting.
Oh, do you think people are trying to emulate you, their hero?
Well, that's why I'm going on the record now, because I don't want to be sued again.
Mm.
I don't have the money to be sued again.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'll ruin me.
You
again.
Have not recovered from
again.
The last time.
Yeah.
I haven't recovered from last time.
You're still bankrupt, is that right?
Yes!
You have not recovered.
But I have a PayPal, if anything. Yeah. No.
Well, I have not recovered my investment.
On me?
In you.
Yes, that's right.
Well, I'm so sorry to hear that. But are you up for... Will it cheer you up for me to tell you this story?
Well, I hope so. You tell me.
Well, in parts, there are some sad parts now that I think about it.
No.
How about we just skip those
Let
bits?
Me know when is the sad part and I'll cover my ears and go la, 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 la.
I mean, there's a few, like, there's some, he's had some ups and downs. Also, there's, you know, there's a couple of mentions of suicide, but I won't be dwelling on them.
Okay.
Little heads up there.
Yep, nice little warning there.
So, yeah, I think, Jess, me saying a bit of a pick-me-up, most of it. Okay, here we go.
He's covered himself legally.
So, which you did not.
I did not. That's exactly what I did wrong.
Huey Lewis was born in 1950 as Hugh Anthony Craig III.
Craig.
And it's not like me saying American Craig. Oh. It's spelled C-R-E-double-G. It is
Craig. Do they pronounce that Craig?
Maybe they pronounce that Craig, actually.
Hugh Craig III.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So, his parents, you can probably guess his dad's name, Hugh Anthony Craig Jr., and his mother, Maria Magdalena Baczynski. And the young family, when he was just 4 years of age, moved to Marin County in California. He had a very bohemian upbringing, which is really interesting because he sort of, in the 80s, he was like big pop star. During the middle of the 80s, he was like as big as it got.
Mm.
You know, pretty, okay, seen spoilers. As being kind of straight and stuff like that. But
Jesus Christ.
His upbringing was quite the opposite of that. Very bohemian. His dad... was studying medicine and went on to become a radiologist, but he postponed that for a while to pursue life as a jazz drummer and piano player.
We're doing both at once?
Yeah, I think so. It was awful at both, but...
But with jazz, it's hard to know.
Titty-titty. It's a different time, isn't it?
Blong blong. Titty-titty-titty. Bling, bling, ting, titty, bling, ting, ting, bling, ting.
Wow.
I love it when you jazz.
Yep, me too. According to Huey, after his dad graduated from Duke as a pre-med, he said, "I'm going to be a professional drummer." And he went to New York and played for a couple of years. But he became very disenchanted. He was bohemian. But he always believed in discipline. And he saw all of his heroes stoned. So he went back to medical school. He was like, he didn't love the drug scene of it all. It's so interesting. I love jazz. I love the bohemian lifestyle, but not those drugs.
Not those pesky
That's not what
drugs.
I'm in it for. I'm in it for the...
Plink, plonk, plink. You got to do the whole thing.
Plink, plonk, ting, tong, plink, a plink, ting, ta, tong.
It's beautiful.
Huey's mum, on the other hand, was more into the drugs, and she was an artist, a bit of a hippie. Born in Poland, but she had a really, you know, rough time early. If you do the math, her and her parents fled Poland during the Second World War.
Right.
According to a 1984 article in Rolling Stone written by Christopher Connolly, his mother, Magda, had wound her way through Portugal and Brazil as World War II raged. And Lewis later said, she often says that during World War II, the sound of freedom to her was jazz, American jazz. When there was American jazz around, there were GIs around, and you knew you were safe.
Oh, wow.
Things were incredibly hard for his grandparents when they arrived in America, though. According to Huey, when my grandparents came to America, they had a real tough time. They were quite wealthy in Poland, but in America, they were discriminated against and not very rich. They committed suicide together.
Oh.
And in that moment, my mum became a bohemian. She was probably, if not the first hippie in San Francisco, one of the very first hippies. She took LSD and hung out with Timothy Leary, Ken Kesey, and Allen Ginsberg. All these people in the blossoming beatnik hippie scene in Sausalito. Any of those names ring a bell? I know Allen Ginsberg, but Ken...
Yeah, they're from that beat generation.
Yes. So she was right at the center of this.
Yeah, wow.
And because of that, so cool. was young Huey. Like, I'll mention a few times, but he'd... at different times during his childhood, he'd like wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh. So the people, you walk into the kitchen and Allen Ginsberg's sitting there.
Just like eating cereal from the box.
Yeah.
Hello. And then was it his dad's walking around being like, these hippies keep taking drugs. Fuck off. Get a job.
Yeah. Yeah, so all, like beatnik poets, jazz musicians, all that sort of stuff would be hanging out his house all hours of the night. But he was naturally gifted academically. It's sort of like sometimes, you know, you rebel against your parents in different ways, and he was just like nailing school. His mom is like on LSD and stuff, and he's like just
really studious.
Yeah, smashing it. He skipped second grade because he was, you know, ahead of everyone else. And he later said that was due to him excelling in the sandbox. Bit of fun. Second grade, you know, I was very early in school. Oh, skip second grade, must be pretty good in the sandbox.
When I was in grade one, I thought I should probably skip a grade. I'd seen it on The Simpsons. I knew it was possible. And I said, Mum, I think I should skip a grade. And she said, why? And I said, I've read all the books in the class. Mm. And that's not even true. I hadn't read all of them. I'd purposely skipped some that I thought were a bit boring or below me.
Well, sounds like you're good at skipping.
Yeah, I should have skipped.
Yeah, then. Skip books, skip class.
Yeah.
When I was in prep, which is the first grade of primary school here in Victoria, I remember someone got a question right and the teacher jokingly said, good work, straight to grade six. And they actually walked out of the room and started walking up the corridor, and the teacher had to be like, oh, no, just a joke. Just, you're not actually going to grade six.
Oh, my God.
And they were in grade prep.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
That's really cute, so dumb.
Yeah. It proved that they shouldn't be doing that.
That's a paradox. The one kid who didn't go up there was forced to go to grade six.
Yeah.
When he was about 12, maybe 13, his parents got divorced. You probably see that coming.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
They seemed so aligned.
Exactly. One of them loved drugs. The other one hated drugs.
Yeah.
The original odd couple.
Yeah. I thought if they can't make it work, what hope do the rest of us have?
Exactly.
This is shocking to me. I need a moment.
It sounds like...
Don't give me a moment then.
We'll give you a moment in post.
Oh, yeah, great. Thank you. AJ, if you could edit in a moment. Thank you.
Seems like I think his mum sort of got custody for the most part, which makes sense again. Give it to the drug mum, not the doctor. Sober dad.
Not the sober doctor.
Not Hugh Craig II.
What kind of parent could that be?
And his dad was keen for him to go to this conservative prep school in New Jersey, which seems like a weird thing for a bohemian dad to want him to do, but it was just mainly to get him away from the drug scene. He didn't think that was good for him. This resulted...
His dad, such a wet blanket.
The mum and dad went to court over it.
Oh.
And the mum's like, no, I want him to stay here in the drug house. The dad's like, no, I want him to go over there away from the drugs.
And it was a bit of a stalemate until the judge asked Huey what he would want to do. And he felt awful about it because he's like, oh, man, it was pretty traumatic to have to choose, basically decide with one parent or the other. But in the end, he went with the prep school. Apparently, he got sucked in by this great glossy brochure, made it look so much fun. But when he got there, he didn't like it so much.
Aww.
Hated it. It wasn't quite the picture postcard he was expecting. But while there, he did continue to enjoy music. Apparently, he'd hop on trains to Philadelphia and saw shows by blues legends like Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. And academically, he was earning honor roll grades, especially maths, or math, as they say over there. And he was also an all-state baseball player. He was a pitcher. So just like kind of high-achieving in whatever he did.
Yeah.
Due to him skipping ahead back in grade two, he graduated high school at the age of 16, and his grades, including a perfect 800 on his math SAT, meant he was accepted into Cornell University in New York to study electrical engineering.
Wow.
At 16?
Yeah.
What a guy.
Real Doogie Howser over here.
Yeah, Doogie Howser actually based on him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's true.
They changed it Huey to Doogie and electrical engineering to MD.
That's good stuff.
Like cut out all the music stuff.
Yeah.
People aren't going to believe this.
And the baseball. And they're like, people are going to be like, a bit much.
Yeah,
make it believable.
And the bohemian parents, no.
We'll cut all that out.
But apart from that, it's exactly alive.
That's crazy.
He planned to focus on baseball over the summer before heading off to college. But his dad instead convinced him to hitchhike around Europe instead. His dad was like, this is the last thing we're going to make you do. You're 16. You've graduated. As far as I'm concerned, you're a man now. What?
But not in the eyes of the law.
But he's like,
you're a child.
And his dad's like, look, I feel like a bit of a nerd for sending you to that prep school.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and get some character back into you. You have to hitchhike now, okay?
Yeah. In Europe. Not down the road. Europe. Yeah,
you got perfect on your SATs. And to be honest, that really made me feel sick.
But I think he was like, you know, pretty wise. And that is much more common wisdom now. This is in the 60s.
Yeah.
But gap years weren't really a thing back then. But he was like, no one knows really what they want to do yet, or it's unlikely. Maybe you'll find yourself over there. Just bum around for a year and just take your time, basically.
But you're so young. 16's so young.
Yeah, that's too young.
Mm.
I was so dumb at 16. I'm pretty dumb now. But, like, I reckon I can get on a plane and go to a different country by myself now and I'll be okay. At 16, no.
You'd be freaking out.
Absolutely. Probably at 20 I still was, actually.
It's so he seems very all over the shop. Going from go to prep, this conservative prep school, to go bum around for a year in Europe as a 16-year-old. But his mum apparently said this was the first good idea his dad had ever had. So she liked it. She's like, yeah, it's a great idea. Apparently, she gave him a Bob Dylan record and said, apparently, the poets are really loving this guy. Should check it out. After the breakup, his mum also started seeing a beat poet named Lou Welch. I don't know. Does that name ring a bell?
Yeah.
And according to Matthew Wills, writing for JSTOR, he was a hard-drinking beat poet and an inspiration for one of Jack Kerouac's characters in Big Sur. He also helped bring Huey up and became his stepfather. So sort of in between, in holidays from prep school, he'd go back for the summer. So it goes from like blazers and ties and stuff during school term and then full hippie lifestyle.
Wow.
LSD in the middle of the, well, not him, but, you know, people around him.
How interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think his mum, I listened, there was a really good episode of WTF that came out back in 2013. And it's just I've listened to that a few times while putting this report together. And I just love hearing him talk. He's just real, he's real fun. He just seems like a super nice guy.
Yeah,
and
cool.
But yeah, he was sort of like, you know, I'd be wearing the blazer and you get home, mum be like, take that blazer off. We're going to see some music or whatever.
Wow. It's kind of a really interesting way to, like, raise a pretty well-rounded person.
Mm.
You know, it's like put him in this really conservative school, but then also, like, loosen up a little. It's interesting.
It is.
It could be terrible, but it sounds like maybe it's working okay for him.
That's right. Apparently, his mum also had a boarder at the time, a guy called Billy Roberts, who was a folk singer-songwriter, and his claim to fame is that he wrote the song Hey Joe, you know, which became a huge hit for Jimi Hendrix.
Oh.
So that was just, he was just boarding at her house. He wrote it during the 60s. He played a lot of harmonicas.
Once. One least butt.
Up and down, up and down.
So he just had heaps in his room and he gave a few of his old ones to Huey and he took a few of them on the trip with him as he went hitchhiking.
Cool.
And then in 1967 he left home in Marin County, California and hitchhiked his way across America with the aim of flying to Europe from Boston for some reason.
It's closer.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll drive as far as, you know, go hitch as far as I can and then go from Boston. But, yeah, do you guys know who, Hey Joe? No.
The song Hey Joe, no. Hey Joe, don't make it bad. Is that right?
That one.
No, that's not the one, but that's all right. I thought it was more impressive than you both gave it. But
we're very young.
Wait, Jimi Hendrix, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Cool person.
It's one of Jimi Hendrix's really big ones. You know, his were all basically, big songs were all covers, like All Along the Watchtower's a Bob Dylan song. That's one of the big ones, like an all-time great rock song.
How's it go?
Hey, Joe. No. Okay, none of that sounded right, but
that sounded like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, it sounded like Black Dog, didn't it, or something? Didn't it?
Whole Lot of Love.
Whole Lot of Love, sorry. God damn it.
God damn it. That's going to kill
me. And this guy wrote a Whole Lot of Love? God.
All right, we're pausing for a second so these can hear this. AJ, sorry.
Rude.
Dear listeners, just give us 1 second. We're just going to play.
And would it be in his top 5 Spotify songs? I feel like I would know, like Purple Haze, Foxy Lady, All Along the Watchtower.
Yeah, it's in amongst those.
Really?
It's had...
okay, it's in the top five, you're right. Voodoo Child, good one.
It is the third most played. It's had nearly 300 million plays.
Wow.
But I guess...
We're going to have to know it.
Okay, let me say that again. So we've just... I've just played Hey Joe to Dave and Jess, and now I'm going to tell them a quick fact again. So at the time, his mum had a boarder named Billy Roberts.
Uh-huh.
He was a folk singer-songwriter who wrote the song Hey Joe.
Oh, my Wait, God. From Jimi Hendrix?
Yes, that's right.
No freaking way.
I love that
Man,
song.
Man, you're lying. That's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
It just, to me, it's just a wild upbringing.
Totally.
It's like Allen Ginsberg, Hey Joe writer.
Yep.
I wouldn't have known Billy Roberts by name, but the guy wrote Hey Joe.
Yeah.
Just all these people are floating through his sphere.
It's very cinematic, isn't it? Mm. Like you can imagine.
It feels like Forrest Gump.
Totally does,
you know,
yes.
Like all these historical figures are just floating through his life.
Yeah.
And that happens, you know, that continues to happen to some extent. So, yeah. So... Off he goes. He hitchhikes across America. Chunk of the trip he rode with a guy who'd stolen a car, and him and a few other hitchhikers each night in the middle of the night would steal petrol by siphoning it. Wow. So they could continue their trip. He talks about it like, you know, there were times where they're driving off and there's a guy coming out after him with a shotgun and stuff like that. Like pretty hectic sort of... visual.
A fun montage, though, in the movie version.
And they're just sort of gargling petrol. Sorry!
His life would make such a good film. He couldn't afford a plane ticket, something I should have mentioned probably. So, he had to figure out another way of boarding a plane.
So, his parents said, go hitchhike around Europe, but gave him no help in getting to Europe.
I think they gave him, or his dad gave him a few hundred bucks, but he's like... I need this. I'm trying to make this stretch out for a year or something.
Wow.
I need to hold on to it as long as I can and only spend it when I have to spend it.
He can't get on a plane. Please tell me he started siphoning plane fuel.
He built his own plane.
he's doing some sort of engineering,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, he can build a plane and fly it.
Yeah.
it's a good guess. But no, luckily one of the guys who picked him up along his journey across America filled him in on this scam, how to scam his way onto a flight. And, you know, it's sort of complex, but also sort of really simple. Basically, you get there really early. I think you kind of find just a ticket. Obviously, it's not all computerized and stuff back then.
Yeah.
And then you change the details just with a pen. And the key was picking a really undesirable seat, you know, middle row over a wing or wherever the ones that would sell last. And he's like... Planes would rarely be fully sold out. They're the last ones to go. So you pick one of them. And then the other trick was you'd then sit. So you'd say, I'm sitting in row 27B. But then you'd sit in, row 34B.
Okay, yep.
And that gives you two shots at it.
If
someone goes, hey, I'm meant to be sitting there, and they come over and say, can I check your ticket? You go, oh, sorry, I'm meant to be over there. So you get it doubles your chances of getting away with
That's
it.
That's good.
And he got away with it.
Wow.
That's so funny. He flew. It worked, and he flew to Europe. Once he got there, he hitchhiked down through France and Spain to Marrakesh in Morocco. He bumped into a South African guy. And who'd hitchhiked his own way up through Africa. And they decided they're going to go to Marrakesh for 2 days, but ended up staying there for months, just smoking hash and busking in the square with his harmonica. And he earned, I forgot what the currency was, but basically $4 a day. $1 would pay for his accommodation, $1 for food. And he was making a small profit every day just from busking on the harmonica.
Wow.
Love it.
And this is just an instrument he's been teaching himself since, you know, not that long ago.
Yeah.
After a few months, hair's grown out. They're looking like hippies and whatnot. And after a few months, they decide to hitchhike back north into Europe. So, they're in Marrakesh in the north of Africa. They head back into Europe. But to do this, they have to go back through Spain. And apparently, it was quite hard for hippie types to hitchhike through Spain. At the time, I don't think I realized this, but Spain was under the dictatorship of a guy called Francisco Franco. Is that?
Name rings a bell, for
a few decades.
Ruled with an iron fist for a long time.
Yeah. Right. So, apparently, it was just a lot tenser there. The vibe was very different. People weren't necessarily going to just pick up some random hitchhiker. And he said a lot of the people who did pick them up would be from other parts of Europe, like German tourists and stuff. And he'd just be playing harmonica all day, waiting, bit by bit, moving across.
I think he'd be playing harmonica all day in the back of the car. Yeah. I'd be like, shut the fuck
I'd be
up.
Pulling
sorry,
back
this
over.
Is as far as I'm going. Yeah. I'm going to live here now.
I'm actually driving to the ocean.
Yeah. Oh, that might explain this next thing. Because, yeah, one of the stories he tells is he got picked up by an old Dutchman. I think he was maybe in his 70s, a guy called Jimmy Vand or something. And he cruised up in this old Chevrolet, 1920s, 1930s Chevrolet, which apparently had been featured in the classic film Casablanca. There's another sort of Forrest Gump moment. This is one of the greatest films of all time, it's meant to be, right?
Yeah.
Never seen it. It looks boring. But
yeah.
Is that
it's long and
my
boring.
God damn, I don't give a damn, ma'am?
My God damn, I don't give a damn, ma'am.
is that movie?
Let's play it again, Sam.
Oh, right. What's the one I'm thinking of where they say
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Right. Play it again, Sam. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Ma'am.
Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am.
There it is. God, it's beautiful to watch his brain work.
Rose or whatever. Rosebud. They're three classic movies that I have not been able to sit through. But I really should because they're
all
meant to.
I don't know what Rosebud is.
Rosebud's the one about that guy, the media, loosely based on that media guy, Orson Welles or something.
No, Orson Welles directed it.
Yes.
And wrote
that's
it and
what
started.
I mean. Yeah. There were fragments of thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, right. But it's Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane.
Rosebud is also a it's a cheat in The Sims. It's a money cheat.
Ah,
do you think that's a little cool. nod?
Probably.
Yeah.
The Sims is very, very high art.
What are some of the other... Because that rings a bell. Like, it feels like in the back of my brain, I'm thinking of that.
You can also type in Ka-ching, Rosebud, or there's another one. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
So anyway,
I'm just playing The Sims a lot at the moment.
So all of a sudden, he's driving through the dictatorship of Spain.
Yeah.
In the Casablanca car.
In a Casablanca classic Chevy. But this guy, this old fella, this old Dutch fella, said he was driving all the way to Holland. So he's like, oh, fantastic. You can take us for, you know, ages. The only problem was old Jimmy was a bit of a loose unit and had a tradition of stopping at every bar they passed. And he'd have a shot at every bar they went. And his passengers would have a shot as well. So
every bar.
Everyone's just shit-faced.
Yeah, including the driver.
Yeah.
Which is not ideal,
no,
as it turns out.
No, but we're looking at it through a modern lens.
That's true, yeah.
Back then, whatever.
We're in a dictatorship.
Okay,
guy's ruling with an
up.
Iron fish.
Yeah, back then.
Fish.
He's ruling with an
iron
fish.
Fish.
Across the face. And what you got to remember is with cars back then, they didn't have seatbelts.
Yes.
The seatbelts that obviously kill you in an accident.
That's right.
Now we've got these killer seatbelts.
Yeah.
It's
and
very
they,
dangerous.
They didn't
very
crumple dangerous. Either, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No crumple zone because the car would just plow through whatever it drove into.
Yeah.
The car was stronger than everything.
Which is what it did soon because he was off his chops and he plowed through a fence and into a flooded field. But maybe it was a harmonica playing in the background. So they're all off their chops in this classic old car, even at the time, you know, it's a 30, 40-year-old car, and the water's just coming up through the floor and they're like, oh, this isn't good. But they're all off their chops and he's like, it's all pretty blurry, but he vaguely remembers the Dutchman getting out a fire extinguisher and spraying the engine and it seemed to get it going again somehow. I'm not a mechanical engineer or scientist.
Or a mechanic.
No, I am one of those.
Yes.
And then...
Or a firefighter?
Yeah, I'm a firefighting mechanic, but I don't see how that would be relevant here. So they end up driving off again, but unfortunately when they got stopped at the Portuguese border... he realized his passport was missing. It had floated out of the car in that field.
Oh, no.
So he was out again, had to find his way to Seville to go to the American embassy to sort out a replacement.
Also, they were driving to Holland and they've somehow driven into Portugal. They were driving the wrong way.
Yeah, what's going on there?
unless you're going up along the whole coast, I guess.
Yeah, I think the driver was drunk.
Yeah.
But it just seems funny to be like, we're going to the Netherlands. All right, we're going to go here.
I'm going the long way.
We'll head west.
Yeah, that is interesting. Why would they have done that?
I don't know, a scenic route. Probably because you thought there'd be more bars along the coast.
Yeah.
You can drink along the way.
Yeah, because Seville is right, you know, it's right down south. So, yeah, I think it checks out. But, yeah, why would he have been going through Portugal? Maybe it was just to get out of...
Yeah.
Maybe it's just, a better place to be
Drive
at that time.
Drive along the coast because there's no dictator there. But does that mean he has to ditch his friends to go to Seville? They keep going without him?
I believe so. So, he heads to Seville and, you know, he doesn't have much cash on him. He just has enough. I think he's got $20 left, which will pay for his replacement passport.
$20.
He gets there and they've just closed. It's a Friday, so he's got to wait. He's got to get through the weekend till they open again on the Monday. So what does he do?
Gamble it.
Plays that harmonica. Pulls it out. That's what he should have done. Yeah.
Plays that harmonica.
He just, you know, hangs out playing the harmonica. And some locals just started loving it. And they go, do you want to play? I've got a concert on this week. And do you want to headline it? His first ever gig. Apparently, it was in front of thousands of people. There was some decent local band there.
And they're like, who the fuck is this guy? Yeah. He's headlining?
According to Connolly, writing the Rolling Stone, he earned $150, you know, which for him at the time was a heap of cash.
Seven passports.
And, yeah, it was organized with the help of some communist students he had befriended there in Seville. And he later said, I thought, we're rich. And the guy said, let's go out to dinner. Let's celebrate. So 35 of us went out. The bill came. It was $140. And the guy took the money out, paid the tab and said to me, here's your $10. And I said, ah, socialism. I get it. Yeah, $10 is still pretty good for someone who's got not much cash.
He only had 20 on him.
Yeah.
Now he's got 30.
That's pretty good.
System works.
You've made $10.
Yeah.
And it's in like a day, you know? You'd struggle to make $10 a day now.
And what a great feast that must have been.
Yeah.
You would have had, you know, with all your new friends. Kings.
Yeah.
It's funny because he would have done the gig for free probably. So they could have said, we'll pay you $10 and it went fantastic. And we get a feast. But then once you've got $150, you're like, the things I'm going to do with this money. Anyway, so he had a wild time over there.
That's so awesome.
Then just because his dad said he wanted us to pursue baseball, but his dad's like, nah.
Go backpack. Go hitchhiking.
Yeah.
Wild.
And then, you know, there's a heap of other stories, but we'll head back to America with him where he enrolled at Cornell. This apparently quite a prestigious school. And there, according to Connolly, he spent his time dodging classes and hanging out with the SDS crowd, which I think is, I looked it up, it's like some sort of students for a democratic society.
I think Americans will laugh at you saying, which apparently is quite a good school. I think it would be like saying, like, Oxford. I think it's pretty good.
People hold it quite highly.
I think it might be in the top 500 universities.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Up there with Monash?
Yeah.
Which campus?
Peninsula.
Oh, no.
Is there one there?
No.
South Africa.
The South African Monash campus is fantastic.
Jayburg.
Yes.
And Jabberg.
They've got all the facilities.
Is that kind of right?
Yeah.
I was going to go do a semester in Jayburg, but then I found out that I'd already done the handful of subjects I would have been eligible to do. Oh. They didn't have as big of a curriculum there, and I'd already done them.
Think about how well you would have gone.
Yeah.
You've already written the assignments.
Oh, I know. That's right. Come on.
You should have gone.
You're saying that's why I can't do it? Surely that's the best reason why I should do it.
I should teach this class.
Yeah. Oh, I was so excited. That's the reason I got my passport years before I ever went out overseas.
One of my biggest regrets is not doing some sort of exchange during university, like a 6-month or 12-month thing, even just a few weeks. I wish I'd done something.
It was, my problem was the go with the flow thing, which I've always kind of had, is good. And it led me to go, I'll go to, I didn't know that was an option. I'll do that and apply. And then but because I didn't plan at all, if I'd thought about it, I would have seen the subjects and avoided them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then maybe if I was really planned out, I never would have even thought to go. I don't know.
I looked at doing a semester in the UK, but because the school years are so different, I would have been there over like Christmas and New Year's. And it was towards the end of my uni, so I just wanted to be finished. Yeah. I'd already been at uni an extra year. I was like, I just want to be done. So then I thought maybe I'll go to New Zealand. And then that didn't feel like enough of a distance.
So I may as well stay.
I'll just stay and finish my degree.
Nothing's better than New Zealand. That's basically what you were saying, you were thinking.
No, I started to go like, oh, it's quite expensive to live on care, but I'd have to get a job. At least I could get a job in New Zealand, you know.
Yeah.
And then there were earthquakes and Mum was like, you're not going to New Zealand. And that's not a bad call, I think.
So, I agree. So, according to Connolly, he spent his time dodging classes and hanging out with this SDS crowd, Students for Democratic Society. He said he liked hanging out with them simply because at that point they were the only ones who smoked pot. I made fast friends with a lot of them. They're all in the movie business now or running for public office or in real estate. They're doing a lot of different things then, Huey.
They're all in Hollywood. Yeah. All three other jobs.
Yeah, yeah, one's an accountant, one's
all
a teacher.
Of them. Yeah.
One's a full-time stay-at-home dad. Yeah. Like, there's so many different things.
He started, you know, rolling through a bunch of different bands, including one called Slippery Elm. He later said, the band was okay, but I was horrible. And for the first time, he started getting into rock and roll. He said, I'd always go to the show and there'd be Otis Redding and the Kinks and the Flying Burrito Brothers, and I always dug Otis Redding. He really liked, and I think this was maybe like a bit of a rebellion against his parents, the hippie stuff and that sort of stuff, but he liked soul music and stuff like that. He said, we were weaned on radio that played Otis Redding, and then the Flying Burritos, and then Dylan and Led Zeppelin, Judy Collins, the Chambers Brothers, Muddy Waters, then Seals and Crofts, folk, country, soul. Got a bit of a mix. He said, that's what the 60s were all about. They weren't about drugs. They were about, even though he did seem to make certain friends just because of the drugs, anyway, contradicts himself a bit, as everyone does. That.
There were no drugs, not a single drug, not even a prescription.
Nah, couldn't get them if you wanted to. Medicine
didn't
invented
exist.
Yet.
You'd cut your toe and you'd die.
It was great.
Yeah.
Better times.
Oh, the good old days.
But he said it was a great time. As long as you're into it, it was cool. I don't care if it was chemistry or if it was politics or if it was about the ood. It didn't matter. If you're into it, it was, well, we'll listen, man. We're there for you. I thought those were wonderful days.
What's the
It's talking
oud?
About youth, I think. It's an old instrument, I think. It's like a lute sort of looking thing.
Sure.
I think. Don't at me. Later saying of his time at Cornell, I really just joined and played in bands for a year and a half. Then the work started to catch up with me. Basically, he says he did about 5 minutes of work over a few years there.
That's not very much.
No. He said, I called my old man. I said, Pops, I'm dropping out. I want to be a musician. And he went, well, you either know what you're doing or you don't. Good luck. And according to Huey, it looked like a very bad decision for a very long time.
His parents seem pretty cool.
Yeah, totally.
Like, for that time especially, you'd think there'd be a lot of pressure to just finish and live a life a certain way.
You need at least a backup plan.
Yeah, yeah, for his dad to be like, all right, well, that might be a fuck up.
The decision is yours. Yeah.
See ya.
You'll figure it out. Good
yeah.
luck.
Yeah, you can always go back to college.
Yes, you can.
Not me.
Dave,
but
Doctor of Podcasting, still
could be.
Still could be.
Still could be one day.
So he ended up heading back west to the Bay Area in California and, you know, got stuck into music. In 1971, he joined the band Clover as their harmonica player. Clover was already, you know, a relatively successful band, had produced and released albums and stuff without breaking through or anything. They had a few band members went on to other things, including future Doobie brother John McPhee.
Oh, his name isn't Doobie.
Yeah, what? How did he get into the brothers? Was he one of the cousins?
How do you get into brothers?
Hey, can I be a brother? No.
No.
Thanks, though. Thanks for your interest.
I'm auditioning for brothers.
You're auditioning for brothers?
Yeah. I've got one, but I thought...
Are you going to read for the part of brothers?
I could do with another one, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you're not... Yeah, you're taking auditions.
I'm taking auditions. I'm holding auditions.
Okay. You smell... And scene. What do you think of that?
That sucked.
Yeah, sorry.
I didn't feel it.
I didn't believe it. No. You smell beautiful.
I know I do.
That's not very brotherly.
To be a true brother, you have to be able to pinpoint something that I'm not sure about, you know? But I know I smell fantastic.
Yeah. You're confident in your own smell.
Yes, in my own stench.
Your musk.
My musk.
I'm just scanning you like one of those 80s futuristic robots.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm finding no chinks in your armor.
Yeah, correct. That's right. No faults.
Yeah.
Damn it. Bulletproof. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I think this is around the time he started going by Huey Lewis. There was a little patch in between Hugh Craig III and Huey Lewis where he, I believe, went by Huey Louie. but, yeah, apparently Huey Lewis was a bit of an homage to his missing stepdad, Lewis Welch. Lou Welch. Yes, that's right. I said missing.
Missing?
Oh.
Assumed dead.
Drama.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was probably insensitive when somebody's assumed dead and I'm like, ooh, juicy. What's the goss? Spill.
I was talking before about Matthew Wills writing about him. We'll go back to him now. Mm-hmm. According to Wills, One day, 1971, the hard-drinking beat poet walked into the woods of Nevada County, northeast of San Francisco. He took a gun and left behind a suicide note. Nobody was ever found, which is why biographies end his dates with a question mark.
Wow.
So, still never been found. Wills also writes, in Song of the Turkey Buzzard, arguably his best-known poem, Welch, it's spelt with a C, so that's what I'm saying, Welch. I don't know if it's just Welsh still. Just letting you know why the poet heads out there are furious.
I think that's Welch. One or the other.
Welch. Welch urged his friends in this well-known poem of his to, quote, place my meat before the vultures in a sky burial. Sky burials in which a person's remains are placed on a mountaintop to be eaten by carrion birds are a Tibetan Buddhist tradition, and it's considered an act of compassion and kindness for the other creatures of the earth who, after all, need to eat too.
We covered that on burial, cremation, or other.
Did we?
Yeah, right. That's one of your options.
Sky burial.
Sky burial.
I don't mind that.
Out in the open, and they just peck away at you, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind that now. Have I grown? It'd be interesting to go back.
Yeah.
8 years ago, I was like, nah.
Ew.
Yeah. My body is a wonderland, but not for the birds. John Mayer, and that's it.
John Mayer just pecking at your body.
Leave my body to John Mayer.
John on Mayer's a like,
no, thank you. I don't want that.
No, it's a no from me. John, you know you want it.
Please shoo away these birds. I'm only to be pecked at by John Mayer.
John Mayer, remember, after all, you need to eat too.
Okay.
This is an act of compassion,
you're
John.
You're a creature on
John,
this
come
earth.
Back here. This is an act of compassion.
Let me compassion you, John.
John, you've left a bit of my body on your plate, John. Come back. No dessert until you're finished eating me, John. Okay, a bit weird. According to poetry scholar Rod Phillips, Welch produced, quote, a finely crafted and innovative body of work in poetry, and he also said that his collected poetry is, quote, a group of poems that are among the purest and most precise of all the beat creations. So he was, you know, he's almost like his mysterious death has almost maybe overshadowed his work, but apparently his poetry was top notch. Hey, let's go for a quick break. We'll be back in.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This show is brought to you by BetterHelp.
I got to get something off my chest.
Okay.
I ate your last biscuit.
I was saving them for my wedding.
That has been stressing me out. I'm so sorry. It feels a lot better to get that off my chest. You know, keeping things bottled up can affect people negatively, and that had been affecting me, and that's a weight off my shoulders.
Yeah.
It was delicious. I'm not sorry, but I did take the last biscuit.
That he was saving for his wedding.
I didn't know that.
That is upsetting to hear, but I think I'm going to have to get some positive coping skills, learn to set some boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you could give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's very convenient. It's flexible. You can fit it around your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and you get matched with a licensed therapist.
You too can get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DGO today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DGO.
Sick. So according to Encyclopedia.com, the manager of the British group Dr. Feelgood caught a Clover show at the Palomino Club and offered the group a recording contract in England. So before he joined, they'd had a recording contract, recorded a few albums, didn't really take off. They were dropped by their label. Now Huey's harmonica player in the band and gets this new record deal, but over in England. So they spent a few years there, sort of nonstop touring in the south of England. And they went on tours and supported some legendary bands, including Lynyrd Skynyrd, who you might have also talked about in that burial, cremation or other episode. You talked about the day of the music died. Did you talk about that as well?
I don't think I talked about that.
I'm just thinking of another musical plane tragedy, but anyway, this was the pre Lynyrd Skynyrd losing most of their lineup in a plane crash. But yeah, he supported them and he said that was they were awesome. They also supported Irish rockers and fellow musical legends, Thin Lizzy, on some pretty long tours. And Huey actually features on their classic live album, Live and Dangerous, playing harmonica. And in the credits, he's billed as Bluesy Huey Lewis.
I like that. That's nice.
Yeah, it's so fun. So it's like, this is like known as one of the iconic live rock albums. And before Huey Lewis was Huey Lewis, really, he was that was where you could find him.
That's awesome. Did he ever try going by Huey Lewis?
Oh, jeez. That's got to be the final stage of evolution. Yeah. If he was a Pokemon, which I've just learned about on Primates recently, we did an episode about Pokemon. So I finally get what you kids are into.
Just learned about Pokemon.
A little bit more. I know they evolve.
Yes.
I know that Mankey becomes Primeape.
Sure.
Yes.
Yep.
And I know that now maybe Hugh Craig III becomes Huey Louie, who becomes Huey Lewis, who becomes Hughes Lewis.
Hughes Lewis, the ultimate form.
Hughes Lewis.
Hughes Lewis. So, yeah, Busy Huey Lewis on the playing with Thin Lizzy. He also played harmonica on Thin Lizzy frontman Phil Lynott's debut solo album.
Oh, my God, Lynott Skynyrd.
What did I say? Oh, Lynott Skynyrd. No, I said Phil Lynott, right?
Yes. Lynott, but I just thought that you can combine.
Oh, my God.
I'm doing that thing you do on podcasts where things sound alike.
Yeah.
Lynott Skynyrd, the Lynott Skynyrd cover band led by Phil Lynott.
That, imagine that would be a great. You could just do the hits of maybe, you know, full household name, well-known hits. I'd say there's probably three or four by Lynott Skynyrd, maybe five or six by Thin Lizzy. Combine the two. That's a full set. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could play that in any pub in the world and everyone will sing along to every word.
Yeah. Lynott Skynyrd.
Lynott Skynyrd. Should we stop the podcast and just quickly copyright that?
And we're back.
Yeah, Lewis really looked up to Lynott. He saw him as a mentor. He was asked in an interview recently if he could have one more conversation with anyone, it would be Phil Lynott.
Oh.
They were apparently working on a different record together, but it was never finished as Lynott died at just 36 years of age.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there was a biopic. I haven't seen it, but there's a biopic about Phil Lynott. It came out a couple of years ago, I think. Anyway, Clover timed their arrival in the UK quite poorly. The way Hughes Lewis talks about it.
His ultimate form.
Basically, they landed around the time punk was taken off, you know.
Right.
And he got punched in the face on the tarmac.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, so, like, they're kind of hippie-ish, country-ish rock, you know, like, just very uncool in a punk scene.
Yeah.
So, just the timing was pretty poor. While he was there, though, he saw a few punk shows, including, if not the first, one of the first shows by The Clash. He was in the audience and he's like, it was wild. There was a lot of spit.
I remember a lot of spit.
And he's like, didn't necessarily love the music, still like the music that I always liked, you know, soul and other things, but I loved the vibe. I love how they were thumbing their nose at the establishment, the music, not following any of the rules.
Loved the spit.
And it's kind of funny to think of him at a punk show going, yeah, I love this anti-establishment stuff, when you sort of flash forward 10 years and the band he makes it in, the news is like, you know, it couldn't be any more sort of corporate-y sounding smooth,
yes, but then you
polished pop for MTV.
So, but then you flash 10 years back and his background is so much more like out there than probably any of the people dressed with like punk hair and that whole room.
Yes.
And they'll be like, you fucking square. And he's really, his reality is like, I didn't grow up with anything you grew up with.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's the absolute opposite.
It feels a bit like you taught me this about The Clash, Dave, that of the two main frontmen of the band.
Oh, Mick Joe Strummer and Mick Jones, yeah.
And Joe Strummer was more like, I'm a punk. He wrote the more sort of rocky, punky songs, and Mick Jones wrote more the poppier, catchier songs.
Yeah.
But you were saying that Joe Strummer
came from a higher class family.
More privilege. And
Mick Jones actually came from a working class, sort of like, you know, struggled growing up. But Joe left all that to become a punk.
Yeah,
I think that's very funny. He's like the famous one for it.
He's there during punk really taking off, but it just didn't, you know, the timing's not great. Elvis Costello was maybe almost like a middle ground. It was closer to, you know, the punky side. But catchier version of than probably, you know, Sex Pistols and stuff. Man, that's going to annoy people who know more about that scene. But You know what I'm vaguely saying.
Yeah.
But anyway, Elvis Costello liked Clover a bit and got them, or, you know, via, a mutual connection. They ended up being his backing band on his debut album, My Aim Is True. Clover.
Oh, became his band.
Were his band for his first album, you know, with Allison and those sort of songs.
So Hughie's played on some amazing albums there.
Well, the rest of the band played on that album.
Oh.
Elvis Costello said, get you to play harmonica on a few songs, maybe a bit of backing vocals and stuff. And but Hughie in the end was absent from the sessions, later saying, I took a vacation. I could have sung a bit or played a bit of harmonica, but we've been on the road since 1970. We've been on the road for like seven, eight, 9 years.
Yeah, wow.
He's like, I'm done. He went to Amsterdam. But it's like an iconic album.
Yeah, he was almost on that one too. That's amazing.
Encyclopedia writes, Clover cut several albums in Great Britain, but none sold well. Disappointed, the members came back to San Francisco and kind of just went in separate directions. So he's into his 30s now, and the breaks never happened. And he's getting to the point, which, you know, in pop music, rock music, music business, you're running out of time, really.
What?
To really break it.
Dave's goal is to have a number one song.
Exactly. By the time I'm 40, I reckon.
Yeah.
Maybe 50. 50?
Oh.
No, 40. I can do it. I can do it.
I can do it. You can do it.
I think you can, yeah.
I got my one hit wonder in me.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, get ready to be inspired.
Thank God, because at the moment, what you just said really has made me feel uninspired.
That spooked you.
Yeah. I'm worried that my big break won't happen.
So, he was sort of looking for something to do. He's back hanging around, just bumming around and jamming in different bands and stuff. And he gets a few nights going at these local little clubs, including one called Uncle Charlie's. And they started this night up called Monday Night Live. And he'd sort of MC it. They'd have some comics on. There'd be the house band. They had a theme song, that sort of stuff. It was almost like a live Letterman show kind of vibe.
Right.
And he was sort of the host of it. And just musicians from a bunch of different backing bands would roll through, like band members from Sly Stone's band, members from Van Morrison's band. Even Van Morrison himself dropped by a few times to play in the shows, as did Ricky Lee Jones and, of course, members of the Doobie Brothers.
Brothers and not.
Do you remember the Doobie Brothers? Here's one of them. For some reason, you know, they built up his own scene, really, and they ended up getting some free studio time for some reason. Someone was there going, oh, we've got some time in the studio, you want to use it? And they kind of worked up this gimmick song at these nights, which was a bit of a mashup. It was a disco version of the theme song from the movie Exodus, which they, of course, called Exodisco. And, so it was a bit of a laugh, but they ended up recording that in these free sessions, including they had the saxophonist Pee Wee Ellis, James Brown's saxophonist, played on the recording, like a legendary muso. And, he later, record producer Jake Riviera, he played it for him, and he apparently said, my God, that's amazing. That's fantastic. That's the most commercial thing I've ever heard. I hope I never hear it again.
Now, get out of my office.
Get out of my office. Phonogram put the record out, but it tanked, probably for the best. If not, I guess Huey Lewis would have been forever known as a novelty disco harmonica player. I don't know.
Interesting jumble of words you just said. Yeah.
Yeah, harmonica, I don't associate that with disco a lot.
No.
Yeah, maybe he was just doing a bit of vocals on it. I listened to it briefly, but it sounded almost like an instrumental. But I probably should have sat through it. Maybe it was just a long intro. Look, I'll do nearly anything to research for this show, but I won't do that. No, it was pretty fun. I'd listen to that. Anyway, this sort of band started coalescing into a group, this Monday Night Live group. And they got a break when Nick Lowe and Jake Riviera turned some throwaway line Lewis said into a song, some real corny sort of thing. Like, apparently he heard him say, the best thing on you is me. Like, I can't remember what it was, but it was something real cheesy sort of play on words thing. And they recorded it as a song, and Riviera was like, oh, we got to pay you for it. You know, we used your idea. And he was like, nah, you don't need to pay me for it. But apparently Riviera was insistent. And according to Connolly, Lewis eventually accepted a round-trip ticket to London to go over and play harmonica on Lowe's Labour of Lust and also Dave Edmonds's Repeat When Necessary. So he's playing on a bunch of other albums and whatnot. And at this point, the Monday Night Collective began calling themselves Huey Lewis and American Express.
Ooh.
A UK label named Chrysalis Records were keen on signing them, but said at the last minute, they're like, we need a new name. And they had to change their name overnight, basically. And that's when they became Huey Lewis and the News. Yes, that's right. This episode is about the band Huey Lewis and the News.
What? Oh, my God.
Bit of a reveal there. Sorry to hold that back.
Holy shit. That's a Jess Perkins level
that
twist.
That's a JPT.
You tell me Huey Lewis is Huey Lewis from Huey Lewis and
yes,
the News?
Yes, that's right.
What in the hell?
What the fuck?
I wasn't prepared for that.
JPLT. Jess Perkins level twist. talking of the early demos, Lewis is very self-deprecating, saying, You should hear these. I was an awful singer. Not that I'm a great singer now, but there was something about us. There was definitely an urgency there, a hungriness. It's like, it's so funny to be like, we weren't very good, but geez, we were urgent.
God,
about
we were
it.
Urgent.
We needed to get it.
Yeah.
Get that badness out of our system.
We've been described as an urgent podcast.
Oh, yeah. Just get it out.
Please make it stop. That sort of thing.
In 1980, I'm kind of going to skip over the news of success to some extent because, you know, it's just them being successful. But in 1980, they released their self-titled album. It was recorded pretty quickly and charted very briefly, but it sank like a stone. Chrysalis gave them another shot and they fought hard for creative control. They made it themselves, but they're kind of learning on the job a bit. And this, of course, added pressure. They knew they needed to have a hit. So they took on a song by Mutt Lange. Yeah, Mutt Lange, with an A at the end, which was called Do You Believe in Love? They'd worked with him through Clover, so they weren't that excited about it. Like, it didn't really work last time, but they thought it is a hit and they needed a hit. You know, they were in their 30s now. The clock was ticking. So they ended up recording it and putting it out on their 1982 sophomore album, Picture This. And as a single, it became a top 10 hit. So it'd been a pretty long journey, but after plugging away for about 12 years in bands, Huey was an overnight success.
Wow.
Mutt is a bit of a recording industry legend. He worked with acts like AC/DC, Def Leppard, The Cars, Britney Spears, The Corrs, Maroon 5, Lady Gaga. He produced AC/DC's Highway to Hell and Back in Black. So he's...
You also mentioned The Corrs, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we understand the caliber
yeah.
that we're
yeah.
working with.
The Corrs.
Yeah. That guy who applied to be the brother in that band, geez, he would have had to go through a lot of auditions.
Yeah.
So MTV was pretty young at the time, less than a year old, and they made a pretty goofy film clip and that got a lot of play, which probably helped propel them a bit. According to Lewis, the label wanted to do this really serious video. So they hired an advertising guy who was a fashion guy who dressed the setup in pastel colors and dressed us up in matching pastels and a lot of makeup and shot the video all day long hard. 2 weeks later, we went to see the rough cut and everybody was there, the record company, us, and the video company, probably about 30 people. The director turned off the lights and plays the video and my heart sank. It was just horrible. There was no direction. There was no reason for this guy to be singing off into the distance. This is a video where we're all in bed singing to the girl for some reason. That's a lot of weird. It's a weird clip, but I think it's sort of goofy fun.
Yeah, it rings a bell.
But he really doesn't like it. And he's like, oh, this is awful. And then it stops and everyone gives it a standing ovation. He's like, yeah, I guess no one knows what they're doing because this sucks. But if they're happy with this, we're going to make our own videos from now on. And they made a lot of real fun, goofy videos, you know.
Yeah, right.
There's that classic one where they're all buried up to their necks in the sand. That's funny.
That's fun. That's great. That's good stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Imagine. You don't need to. You can watch it in this video.
Fun fact, Jess, pending. Mm-hmm. The woman in that first video... You know, the love interest was William Shatner's daughter, Elizabeth Shatner.
It's not that interesting.
Okay. but it is very fun.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That's the most fun thing I've ever heard, but it's not interesting.
According to Encyclopedia.com, they broke through as headliners with the 1983 album Sports. Most of the tracks were written by Lewis or other band members. And yeah, it had so many hits. Apparently, Lewis, again, before this album, they're like, we were lucky to get through that last one and we sold about 10 times the amount of the first one, which bombed, but it still isn't a big enough hit to sustain us in the industry. We need this album to be huge. We need these songs to get played on radio. So it's basically like, we're writing every song designed to be a hit song, which is like pretty wild idea. Like, you know what we should do? We should just write an album of hits.
Mm.
Wow.
And they genuinely try to do
that.
They're
the first people to ever try that.
And like, it's what happened, you know, nearly like so many of the songs became top 10 hits.
Why doesn't everybody do that? Why are so many albums got a couple of tracks you just skip?
Yeah. Like when you're writing, you go, I'm just going to write a couple of album tracks. I don't want another hit. I've got too many hits.
This one won't be played on radio, but that's all right.
I can't play them all live.
Yeah.
Can't be bothered.
But also, like, you know, it's basically going, none of these are really us necessarily what we want to do. These are just made for the broadest appeal possible. Yeah. So, yeah, they were top 10 hits with Heart and Soul, I Want a New Drug, Heart of Rock and Roll, and If This Is It. And they won a Grammy Award for Heart of Rock and Roll.
Wow.
So it was just a huge smash hit record.
And he's in his, what, late 30s by now?
Yeah, mid-30s. Moving into his mid to late 30s.
Okay.
Give him time, my
friend. Good to know.
Because we're early to mid.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of years left to come with my number one hit, win my Grammy.
When you're in mid.
Yeah, okay.
And then late, you can just sort of peter out.
Yeah, I'd say mid, probably late's over. He was into his mid-30s, but he probably looked older.
Okay, and you look younger.
Mm. Okay, so this could work out
this
well.
This is looking good for you. And I look just right.
I mean, he also looked like super handsome older though, so.
Yeah, but I look but super handsome younger.
Yeah, so that, I don't know. I don't know if does that balance out?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think it still kind of works out in Dave's favour.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm. Encyclopedia continues. The group's next album, 4, was greeted with high expectations. It also produced top 40 hits like Stuck With You and Hip To Be Square.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, like he kind of regrets that he sang that song in the first person. It's funny knowing his backstory now because it's all about initially he'd written it all about like he goes to work or whatever. I can't remember the lyrics, but, you know, he's keeping a balanced diet. He does all this. He's hip to be square. But he ended up, like, in the end being like, nah, it's sort of funny. People get it.
I'll do it from my perspective.
I do this. I do that. But it became, like, that was kind of the beginning of the end for them being mainstream popular. People, you know, were giving them shit a bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, how uncool. They think it's cool to be square. That's not cool. So, yeah, he talks about it sometimes. He's like, I kind of regret not keeping it in the third person. Around that same time, they contributed 2 songs to the film Back to the Future, previous topic, including the chart-topping Power of Love, which earned an Oscar nomination for Best Song of 1986.
That's awesome.
And he actually had an uncredited cameo in that, where he played, like, again, like a dork, but he was like a Battle of the Bands judge, and his line was... Marty McFly, Michael J. Fox, is shredding a version of a Huey Lewis song on guitar.
Yeah.
And Huey goes, stop. It's just too damn loud. Bit of fun.
That's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Big fan of that. But, yeah, skipping over the successful period, you know. They're on top of the world.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about all the good stuff.
But to help it illustrate how popular he was at the time, do you know what a Q score is? I hadn't really heard of this. It's a number measurement. Apparently, it used to be a big deal. It measures the familiarity and appeal of a brand or a celebrity or whatever. Oh. And in the mid-80s at this time, apparently Coca-Cola went to him and offered him a bunch of money to do an ad and said, you currently have the highest Q score in the whole country. Like,
wow.
Higher than, I don't know, name someone.
The Queen.
Higher than her.
The most recognizable.
And likable as well.
Wow.
Familiarity and appeal. So, like, currently, I believe Tom Hanks, and has been for quite a while, is, like, the highest.
Shit.
Or one of the highest. If you know that kind of idea, everyone knows him.
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone likes
him. And they're generally liked.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Tom Hanks is a good one.
So, yeah, he turned back Coke, and he says, I regret that. I should have just done it. He's like, we're making good money. I didn't want to sell out. You know, I don't want to look like I'm selling out for the money. And he's like... But over the coming years, everyone did. So I wish I just went and took the money. He also was one of the solo singers in the smash hit charity single, We Are The World. Have you seen that doco that came out early this year?
No.
No, I haven't watched it.
I think it's on Netflix. I watch it. You know, it's slow, but it's interesting. There's a lot of, you know, footage from the time, which is pretty cool. But the lineup is wild. So he, not everyone got to sing a solo, but he got the late call up when Prince fell through.
Fell through a wall.
Fell through a wall, which is weird. Normally you fall through a floor, but. Yeah.
Was trying to say, I said wall.
Fell through a wall.
When Prince fell through a wall.
That's the kind of thing. He went flying somehow. Yeah. Maybe you can fall through a wall.
Yeah, I'll if you fall sideways.
Yeah, you can fall sideways.
But off a balcony into a wall. And then through the wall.
Yeah.
How's this for a list of names who are all in the room with him also singing solos? Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, Tina Turner, Billy Joel, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, Willie Nelson, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, and Ray Charles.
That's amazing.
I don't know any of those names. I'm young.
Apparently, Willie Nelson asked him, he's like, oh, we should play golf sometime. And Bob Dylan came up and said, you talking about golf? That's ridiculous. And Huey said, your last album was ridiculous.
Oh!
He said that to Bob Dylan.
God,
Bit of fun.
Sucked the fuck in, Bob Dylan.
If you do watch it, there's some just look for Bob Dylan's face. Or even if you don't watch it, look at clips of Bob Dylan in the chorus. Like they're all standing on the wall and he just looks so confused. It's really fun.
Why is he so confused?
He's like, you know, everyone's singing da 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 and he's like, I'm singing that. You know, he's just like it looks like he's thinking, why am I here?
You can't put Bob Dylan in a chorus.
No, yeah. Doesn't feel like you're playing to his strengths.
No. Doesn't feel like he'd fit.
Anyway, and I say it sounded mean-spirited, but he was obviously just mucking around with the legendary Bob Dylan. He's like, it's weird to be in the room with him.
Fuck him. Get that fuck him.
He said later, or quite recently, he said of the night, it was an amazing night. I knew that evening that this was the career event of my life. 40 years later, it still is.
Wow.
And yeah, he's just so nice. I really love listening to him talk in interviews.
And I believe there's a story you've shared before.
I've tried to,
tried to share.
He tells it a lot better than me, so just find him telling it. On that documentary, I think he...
Oh, really? Because and what episode was that when we were talking about Live Aid?
I was confused between Live Aid and whatever this is, Where the World
Where
was.
Where the World. And you did it, I think Jess wasn't even there.
No, it was you, me, and Zammit from Sans Pants.
And, Matt did this...
At the Sans Pants Studios.
Big build-up to this story and then sort of forgot the end.
I couldn't remember the end. It was all set up and no payoff, but I realised that the story is not that good. He just tells it with such charisma and he's so excited to tell it. And he's telling a first-hand account of this thing.
Yeah.
So that makes it great. Me retelling it, even if I nailed it, wouldn't be worth saying.
Yeah.
But I didn't even nail it.
Couldn't remember it.
No. Through the 80s, well, you know, he was continued to play harmonica on a bunch of different albums, really diverse stuff like Bruce Hornsby's, you know, Things Will Never Be the Same, Diddlin', Diddlin',
Diddlin'. Oh, yeah.
He's on that.
That's Just the Way It Is.
Yes, that's on. I played on with Hank Williams Jr. I think it was that he covered a Hank Williams Sr. song on Sports, the final track on Sports. And even previous Do Go On topic, Jimmy Barnes.
Oh,
he
wow.
played on Freight Train Heart. Which is pretty fun.
That's pretty cool. Our Jimmy.
That's right. Sadly, in 1987, Huey suddenly lost all his hearing in his right ear. So he's like right at the peak of his fame. And he later told Rolling Stone, I felt like I'd been out in a swimming pool and my ear was full. I couldn't shake it out or pop my ears. I went to all kinds of doctors and an EMT. And they finally said to me, get used to it. I said, get used to it. I'm a musician. I need this. But unfortunately, yeah.
That's interesting.
The doctor said it was unlikely it would ever return, but he was sort of hopeful. He said acts like Brian Wilson have a similar thing, can only hear out of one ear. And, yeah, eventually he was diagnosed with Meniere's disease, which, according to Huey, is a syndrome based on symptoms. Like, they don't know what's causing or anything.
Right.
If you've got fullness in your ear, it feels like your ear's full. You get vertigo, bad tinnitus. Or tinnitus, I don't never know. I've got that, but I don't know how to pronounce it. But then they call it Meniere's disease, but they don't really know what it actually is, so they don't know how to treat it.
Yeah, right.
It's just like, this
you
stuff.
Treat the symptoms, not the actual disease, because they don't know how to treat the disease.
And he's like, day to day, it can be all the way up to okay, But at the worst, it's debilitating, and he can't hear, and he just has to lie down. You know, the vertigo's so bad and whatnot.
Yeah, vertigo's pretty full on.
Yeah, but Lewis adjusted to life with one ear, and he went about his life and career. Like I sort of said before, the follow-ups from Sports and Four weren't as bigger hits, but the next five albums all charted in the US, never as sold as much. Back to the Future, like I mentioned, is probably the film you most associate with Huey's work, but maybe also American Psycho. Have either of you seen that? There's a classic scene in it where this is Paulie Puoso writing for Grunge. The film version of Bret Easton Ellis' American Psycho came out in 2000, and like the book, it wasn't shy of showing Patrick Bateman, who played by Christian Bale, his love for Huey Lewis and the News, and he's in it. He's a he's a murdering psycho.
From America.
Okay.
And it included a scene where an unhinged Bateman delivers a speech about Lewis's music before dispatching with a professional rival played by Jared Leto with an axe.
I have seen that, yeah. Yes.
In part, the scene goes like this. Do you like Huey Lewis and the News? And he replies, they're okay. And then Bateman goes, their early work is a little too new wave for my taste, but when Sports came out in 83, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically. The whole album has a clear, crisp sound and a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost. He's been compared to Elvis Costello, but I think Huey has a far more bitter, cynical sense of humor. And then he's doing this speech while he's like putting down newspaper, he's putting on a raincoat, and his victim goes, is that a raincoat? And Bateman goes, yes, it is. In 87, Huey released this. Four, their most accomplished album. I think their undisputed masterpiece is Hip to Be Square. A song so catchy, most people probably don't listen to the lyrics, but they should. Because it's not just about the pleasures of conformity and the importance of trends. It's also a personal statement about the band itself. And then he raises the axe and kills him. Classic scene. Apparently, the author, Bret Easton Ellis, since said he feels a bit of regret. He feels a bit bad about it. He's like, they weren't my favorite band. I was more of a Bruce Springsteen guy, but I didn't think they really deserved to be shat on like that. He said, I like them more than the implied criticism that's in that text. But despite the book and the film taking the piss, Lewis is apparently quite happy to be associated with it and has even played the killer in a Funny or Die parody version of the scene.
Ah.
Yeah, the other movie associated with Huey is maybe Ghostbusters. As the story goes, both Lindsay Buckingham and Huey were approached to come up with the theme song for the movie, but they both declined. Lindsay Buckingham from
Fleetwood Mac,
previous topic. In the end, Ray Parker Jr. stepped up and wrote its smash hit theme. Da-na-na-na-na.
I would have told you that was Huey Lewis.
Well, there you go. Okay. That's with good reason, because it sounds like a Huey Lewis and the News song, and in particular sounds a lot like their song that came out a couple months before called I Want a New Drug. According to Ledger Note, the now-defunct magazine Premiere wrote that the film's producers admitted in 2004 that they used the song I Want a New Drug as the temporary background music in certain scenes, including a clip they sent to Parker for inspiration. Parker says, I wasn't copying it at all, but it seems like either that's not true or he just, absorbed it subconsciously.
Yeah.
So it's very unlikely to be a coincidence. Anyway, they ended up getting sued over it, and they settled out of court in a deal, but it put a gag clause on it, so they've never really talked about it. Apart from once in 2001, according to Mental Floss, VH1's Behind the Music series had an interview with Huey where he said, the offensive part was not so much that Ray Parker Jr. had ripped off this song. It was kind of symbolic of an industry that wants something. They wanted our wave and they wanted to buy it. But we were like, it's not for sale. But in the end, I suppose they were right, because basically with the settlement, they did buy it. You know, they paid you to have it. They just, you know, it's like, what's that saying? Ask for forgiveness rather than permission or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Another nailed cliche by me.
But yeah, that's true.
So he's, associated with these films musically. He's also done bits and pieces of acting over the years, including in Robert Altman's critically acclaimed film Shortcuts and also the 2000 film Duets, in which his cover of Cruisin' with Gwyneth Paltrow became a number one hit.
Oh, that was him. Yeah, cool.
He also appeared in various TV shows. I didn't realize this, including Just Shoot Me, a few episodes of One Tree Hill, The King of Queens, and The Blacklist, which was only a few years ago.
Oh, they're all very different shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. jumping to 2018, this is another little sad bit, well, quite a sad bit. He was playing, the band was still playing, still love music. He was like, I'm kind of, he wasn't that upset about the band's popularity coming. He's just like, I just wanted to be in a band that can sustain a living, and that's what we do. We just like playing as a band.
And are the band members pretty consistent?
Like, yeah, been with there's forever? A couple of changeovers. A couple guys have died, and one got into some trouble with the cops, I think. I think the guy with, like, you see in all the clips and stuff, he's always just got a cigarette hanging out his mouth. Even in, like, underwater scenes and stuff. Very funny stuff. Anyway,
he got in trouble with the cops. I think the he might have.
I think the bad boy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, huge shock here.
Jeez, I hope they don't sue if that's not true. Allegedly. Huey not Truey in the Louie. No, that wasn't anything. So, anyway, jumping to 2018. And so, he's still been touring that whole time. But sadly, yeah, his health issues got even worse. In January of that year, his other ear went. And brutally, it happened on his way to the stage, going to perform with the news. Like, he's literally walking out to play. And he's like, he's hoping he's just sort of shake it off. According to an interview with Andy Green, he said he hoped things would improve once he got on the stage. But when the band kicked into the opening song, the sound only got worse, saying, I thought the bass amp had blown a speaker. I just heard this horrible noise and I couldn't find pitch or even hear myself. It was an absolute nightmare. Oh. The worst thing. Just horrible. So, he was super depressed, like lowest ebb for a while. He went to every specialist, tried every treatment, all sorts of different things, diets and, you know, tried anything. But, yeah, nothing helped and he was absolutely shattered. And, of course, the symptoms are pretty debilitating in one ear, but now he's got it in both.
Yeah.
You know, the vertigo, the tinnitus and all the rest. But Green writes, with the help of his children, he had a couple of kids, and close friends, he slowly pulled himself out of his misery, saying, it turns out you can get used to almost anything. He has said that his kids, his relationship with his kids is really strong. He felt like, though he loved his parents, it felt like they parented him until really up till he was about 12 or 13.
Yeah. So and they were like, you're on your own.
Yeah. Whereas he's like maintained a really close relationship with them. He's like, they're my best friends and stuff like that. Which, I don't know, depending on the day, I think Jess would either think is real cool or real lame.
It's pretty lame.
Yeah. It's that day.
Try again tomorrow, Huey.
He also realized his condition was even more complicated than he originally thought. Some days he was essentially deaf, but other days he heard well enough to engage in conversations. He created a scale of 1 to 10 to explain it to others. 10 is what he'll never get to again. That's what he was before it first happened. And then he's like, a 5, I can hear speech fine with hearing aids. Under a 3, I can't even hear the phone ring. But he's just not able to sing anymore. So he's basically had to retire from the music biz, which is so brutal. Yeah, because listening to music's, he can listen to conversation, but music is just impossible. Because there's different harmonics, overtones, undertones. Like, you might hear the bass going bump, 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 but I just hear crunchy static.
Yeah, wow.
He says, I fight for pitch and I can't find it. If I can't find pitch, I can't sing. It's horrible. The timing of this was particularly cruel because when it happened, him and the band were working on their first album of original songs since 2001's Plan B. So, they're working on like 17 years or something.
Yeah, wow.
But luckily, they had recorded 7 songs prior to 2018 and were able to release that as the band's final album in 2020. The album was called Weather. See what they've done there? The band's called The News. Their big album's called Sports. Final album's Weather. New Sport and Weather.
That's great.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
Just a bit of fun.
Ask me what I think of that today.
What do you think of that today?
Love it.
Don't ask me tomorrow.
Don't ask
it's not
tomorrow.
Even day to day. It's minute to minute.
Yeah, I'm exciting is what I'm hearing.
And finally, the last thing I'll talk about, because he is back in the news. Oh, my God, I didn't mean that. And
but not the weather.
Because he's just launched or helped launch a Broadway jukebox musical called The Heart of Rock and Roll, which is inspired by the chart-topping anthems of Huey Lewis and the News.
Ah.
Apparently, the story sounds so weird. The story revolves around a failed rocker who winds up having to choose between a resurrected music career and an executive job at a cardboard company.
This sounds like one of your questions from Who Knew It with Matt Stewart, and that is a fake movie title.
I should. That should be a question.
What is the plot of? Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. Yeah. Instead of a movie, do a Broadway musical.
I'll try and record this. I'll record the next Who Knew It before this comes out. So, because all guest listeners do go on.
Yeah, of course, that'd ruin it. So he can have a great rock career or work at the cardboard shop.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil it. What's it going to be? Okay. The opening night was a star-studded affair. Mark Short was there, Michael J. Fox, and the surviving members of the News. According to the Rolling Stone,
how many Doobie Brothers?
Oh, I think probably a lot. The extended Doobie family.
Wow.
According to the Rolling Stone, the Lewis Renaissance doesn't end there either. Two of his songs, The Power of Love and Back in Time, are also part of the current hit Broadway show based on the Back to the Future film franchise. And for pop culture nostalgists, like I was talking about before, one of the must-see docs of the year is The Greatest Night in Pop, about the recording of the 1985 charity single We Are the World. And he's one of the handful of talking heads who talk about it in the current day.
That's cool.
Just a final paragraph here. Asked by a journalist how he's learnt to deal with his health issues, he replied, "Well, deal with them as best as you can. You remind yourself there are a lot of people out there much worse off than I am. I have two great children who won't let me feel sorry for myself, and the musical has been a huge therapy for me."
Oh, that's nice.
Sort of, yeah. It's a real roller coaster of a story. It's an amazing life. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Some pretty hectic hardships.
Yep.
Throughout, but he just seemed like, I mean, obviously he's had his ups and downs. That's also a lyric from one of his songs. They've had their ins and outs. Do you think the people who started listening to this because I did a Pantera episode are going to be thinking, oh, I'm pretty sick right now?
Yeah.
But that's the thing. His life is way more complicated and, like,
very interesting.
Cool than you would probably think.
Totally. Yes,
and on and off, they've probably almost been a punchline and they still don't really get, proper respect in the music business. Like, because it's pretty easy in the end to write an album full of hit songs.
Yeah. Everyone's done it. So,
I mean, if you wanted to, you have.
Yeah, if that's what you were, if you wanted like commercial success from your music and you wanted to write a bunch of songs that lots of people like.
Yeah, and if you wanted to be the most famous and liked person in America at one time.
Then yeah, obviously anybody could do it.
Isn't it so funny? Like, easy, but we're talking about art, man.
Yeah. They're just following a formula.
But yeah, he was like really put in the years
of
touring, recording, grinding it out.
And also played on so many cool bands work as well. And they obviously like working with him. I think he seems like he's just a guy that would be great to hang out with and whatnot.
Just a great hang.
Great hang. I think that's the other part of the Q test. Yeah. What kind of hang would they be?
Would you want to hang with them?
I don't want to hang with Hanksy.
Do you?
Hang with Hanks?
Yeah, you don't want to hang with Hanks?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
He seems all right, I guess.
That's what they're going for. Who's the most all right person in America right now? Oh, that's great. Oh, because, you know, over the years, Matt and I have spoke a little bit, joked about Hugh Craig III. So
it's just such a fun name. That was the in. I'm like,
yes.
I want to know more about Hugh. But also his life is so, like, you hear the name Hugh Craig III. You know about the peak of Huey Lewis and the News and you go, and prep school?
Yes.
You think, and you draw a straight line through all of that and you think this guy was just a pretentious sort of rich kid.
Exactly. Always had everything you wanted.
Mm. Yeah.
Never really
no hardship
done anything interesting.
Yeah.
And then you look into him and you're like, whoa, that's a cool life.
Yeah. And if people want to hear more, we did do an episode of Listen Now, our least listened to Dugong podcast. About
that's how we rank them.
About the album Sports, I did with my cousin Sam Tongan. So yeah, I think it was the first episode of season two. So yeah, season two, episode one. If you want to hear us, we go through track by track, and I can't remember what we say, but I imagine I'd say some of these things, and I say how much I love him.
I love you, Huey.
What a guy. Dave, you've got to get out of my sight because I can't right now.
You've done so many podcasts today that you've had enough. Yes. You've had your fill of David Warnke.
Yeah. Is that all right if you go? Because I just want me and Jess to do everyone's favorite section of the show.
Yeah, because Jess and I, you know, we recently did it together with just the two of us. And sometimes it's nice to just have a bit of one-on-one time with your friend. Mm. And I get that I've been asked to fuck off.
Yeah.
So,
politely.
Yeah, politely. So I won't be here for the Patreon section, but I do want the Patreon people to know that I love them.
Mm. That's nice.
Does that go for everyone I'm going to mention?
Yes, all of them in advance.
Okay, you're going to regret that.
And you'll never guess what band I've booked for the Triptych Club.
Oh, do you want to put slide a piece of paper over?
Yeah, slide it over to you. Oh, well, and you can announce it at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy moly. Really?
Yes. We got them.
That is big. Based on what I've just said about how someone can't play music anymore, this is big.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you, and
anything you want to plug before you go?
Yeah, just listen to my podcast, Do Go On. Sometimes I'm on the whole episode. Other times I get asked to leave.
No, Dave's got to go to work. I promised that this episode wouldn't go as long as this, but in the end, it did.
But we've had a lot of fun today. We've had a lot of fun.
We've had our ups and downs. Yes, we've had our ins and outs. I wish I knew some more of the lyrics. My dad used to just go through the JB Hi-Fi discount bins, and he'd bring home best of albums. So as a kid, he brought home the best of Huey Lewis at one point. And a few times just became obsessed with that album. Also, it's funny.
It just had every track from sports on it.
It was pretty sports heavy. Sports and Four. But another classic. I think there was some funny line he said at some point, like self-deprecating as well. He's like, something about like the Rolling. Yeah, he said, because Rolling Stone never really liked him. They'd give him bad reviews and stuff. He said, I think we were Rolling Stone's favorite band since Toto, which Dad also had the best of. But he also had Neil Young and cool stuff as well. I promise. All right, Dave, fuck off. Please.
I'm trying to get out of here.
You just do it. We'll start. Hey, Jess, are you ready for everyone's favorite part of the show?
Yes.
This is where we thank a few of our great Patreon supporters. If you want to get involved, go to patreon.com/dogoonpod. The first, you get all sorts of things. You have to vote on episodes. My very next topic will be voted on by the great Patreon supporters. Votes. What else? You get tickets. Access early, you get discount codes, all these sorts of things. But if you're on the Sydney Scheinberg level, you get to give us a thing called a fact, quote, or question, which actually has a jingle go something like this.
Fact, quote, or question.
Dave.
Ding!
Oh, he just snuck in the ding.
Yeah.
Which he never forgets. And Jess always remembers the sing. Mm-hmm. The way this works is people on the Sydney Scheinberg level get to give us a fact, a quote, or a question, or a brag or a suggestion, and I read them out. I've just got a couple in today, I guess. Yeah. People who are on that level, feel free to get them in because we're running a little low. So, but we'll get through a couple today. First one comes from, see Dave, the first one comes from Daniel Headley, aka, you also get to give yourself a title, Director of Detector Inspector Introspection Reflection on whether Detector Inspector is really fucking necessary. Why are they always coming back to my house, fuck? Wow, let's control that one early. and we got a question here. Why do these stranger men keep coming into my house for 5 minutes every 6 months to press a button on my smoke alarms?
Yeah.
I can do that. Leave me alone. A detector inspector's a thing, or just an Australian thing. They make me irrationally annoyed. What's something that makes you irrationally annoyed or angry? Is that? I've never heard of that. Is that
You haven't had detector inspector come to your house?
No.
Their property manager sends them out probably twice a year.
I've never had that.
And they just come, they bring their little ladder. We only have one smoke detector in our entire apartment because it's small, and they bring it in, they check it, and they leave.
I wonder if I'm just not home when they do it or something.
Well, yeah, maybe.
I've lived in so many houses over the years. And it's never happened. You know, I'm quite an old man.
I know, but I'm saying
it's never happened.
The property manager would let you know.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so it hasn't happened.
Yeah, I wonder why. Maybe it only happens in affluent suburbs.
That has to be it.
That must be it. Nanny state.
It's because of our
only
money.
In the east. Yeah. What anything? Anything irrationally annoy you?
So many things.
Is one of them? Someone doing a half hour longer on their report than they said they would?
No, I just don't feel well.
Daniel, that is a fantastic question. And you got me on that tongue twister.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Irrationally, I think I don't like it when people don't indicate to change lanes.
Oh, my God, yeah. I hate it when people stop in the middle of a footpath to text.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Pull over.
Or you have a group of people who just spread.
Oh, fuck you.
Covering the whole...
I've started to loudly complain about that.
Oh, really?
Like, real passive aggressive. It's bullshit. It's awful. Yeah. It happened the other day. I was walking along and there was a group of four abreast.
You can't be four abreast.
I was like, why am I going single file? Mm. Move the fuck over.
And this isn't like cyclists, I get it, because they're trying to protect each other from cars knocking them down. But when it's walkers v walkers.
Move over.
Bunch up.
Shut the fuck up. I hate you.
The people on each wing.
Go behind.
They can't talk to each other. So is there any point for being, you'd be better off.
The point is just being an asshole.
Mm. Bad people.
Bad people.
Yeah, so maybe that's.
Yeah, it probably answers your question, I guess.
Only problem you said irrational. I think that's quite rational.
No, I get to, but the level of anger I get to is not, it's not justified.
Okay. The second and final one this week comes from Mr. Justin McCain. Belays a silly game. And his title is Insert Matt Singing Here. Interesting title.
Justin has your number, doesn't he?
And Justin's asking a question writing, if you could eat one entree only for the rest of time, what would it be? For me, it would be a cheese pizza.
Oh.
Entree.
Never thought of a cheese pizza as an entree.
Yeah, I don't know what, I guess a garlic pizza, like a little bread, garlic pizza, cheese pizza.
I'd have that for sure.
Yeah.
Great answer, Justin.
How far can you stretch entree? Could I just have assorted cheeses?
Yeah, maybe. a charcuterie.
Oh, my God. Can I have a charcuterie?
For entree every time? Yeah, I'd go like a garlic bread or like a garlic pizza type thing. Yeah, that's always going to hit the spot.
What else? Yeah, I can't think of what else would. Yeah, soup.
No, I'm not having soup.
Not in this kitchen that we're in.
No,
it's too hot.
I've got a guy's coming to look at it, but I don't. It's not looking good.
Oh my God! Do you have the
detector inspector?
The soup detector inspector.
Yeah, the soup detector inspector's coming, and he's going to be very mad at me because this soup is far too hot.
Mm. All right, I think we're all happy to just share the cheese pizza with you.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine by me. Thanks, Justin. Thanks for ordering for the table. I love that.
Thank you so much.
Takes the pressure off.
Justin McCain and Daniel Headley. The next thing we like to do is shout out to a few of our other supporters. Mm-hmm. That accent changed. And
I liked it.
Yeah. Was sort of South African, but also that
bit French.
A bit, almost en français.
Yeah.
So the way this works, Jess, you normally come up with a bit of a game?
Yeah, I think we are obviously naming their band.
So it's the someone, someones, and the somethings.
Yeah.
Great.
You understand the format.
I reckon just for efficiency.
Yes.
Do you want to either read names or give band names?
I'll read names.
Okay.
My brain's working pretty slow.
Great. I'll just say, because I think this suits me well.
Yes.
Very quick mind, I'll just, smash through. Whatever comes to mind.
All right, great. Let's give it a go a couple of times, and if you need it, we can get up the horse name generator.
Okay, great.
Okay, so first and foremost, we'd love to thank, from Laylaw Park in New South Wales, Jack Townsend and the...
Gongs.
Love it. Mm. Okay, yeah, we can smash through these. All right, great.
Jack Townsend, thank you so much for your support, and your band, the Gongs, who support you.
From Wantirna South in Victoria, where I grew up as a child.
Ooh.
Mitchell Wooton.
And the Dim Sims.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, Mitchell Wooton and the Dim Sims.
Yeah, also good entree, maybe.
That's fun.
Cheers, Mitchell.
From Virginia Beach in, I assume, Virginia, VA, it's Teacup Tofu and the...
Pebbles.
Oh, that's cute.
I don't mind that. I think
Teacup Tofu and the Pebbles.
Yeah.
That's cute
as
shit.
That's real good.
Love
Teacup
that.
Teacup Tofu.
Yeah. And their fans could call themselves Pebbleheads.
Yeah. We're Pebbleheads.
That's really cute.
We love Teacup Tofu.
I follow Teacup Tofu and the Pebbleheads and the Pebbles around on their national tour.
Mm.
Next, from Slidell in Los Angeles. No, L.A.
Louisiana?
Louisiana, yeah, it's got to be. I was like, no, Los Angeles is a place. from Slidell or Slidell, Josh Faye.
And the Fallen Leaves.
Oh, that's poetic. That's nice. I like that one very much. From Warwick in Great Britain, it's Hannah Albone.
And the Greeks.
Hannah Albone and the Greeks. That's sick. Good stuff. Okay. From Wentworth Falls in New South Wales, Hayley, Zena, Poynton, and the...
Jailbirds.
Oh, you are so good this? Like, we were joking that you were going to be dog shit because sometimes you have to think of a word and you go, blah, 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 blah. But you're doing really well.
Yeah, it's been strange.
You're closing your eyes. They're just coming to you.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Oh, my God. Okay, a few more. From Silver Spring in MD. Is that Maryland? No.
Yeah, do this all the time. I think it is Maryland. Yeah.
I'll look that up in a sec. It's Tyler Robertson and the...
Icebergs.
Oh, my goodness gracious me. Very good stuff. Maryland is correct. Next we have from Camperdown in New South Wales, Brenna Dowling and the...
Refreshing Drinks.
Oh, my God. I mean, he just took a sip, so that one felt a little more in the room, but that's not bad. And finally, from Dallas, Texas, Marissa Kurtz and the...
Mystery Gunman.
Oh! No bullshit. That was impressive. That was really impressive.
Thank you so much to Marissa, Brenna, Tyler, Haley, Hannah, Josh, Teacup, Mitchell, and Jack. And the last thing we need to do, Bob, is welcome in a few new members of the Triptych Club. Actually, three members to the Triptych Club.
Wow.
So
that's fitting.
Yeah, this works really well. You're behind the bar.
Yeah.
Have you got any drinks on?
I've got a drink special. It's a cocktail. It's called Huey Lewis and the Blue. And it's just all blue stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Blue Caracao, however you say it. And
Blue Caracao's in that she's an actor in The Big Bang Theory. Is that right?
Kaylee Cuoco.
Oh, yeah, close.
Blue Caracao. Yes,
but it was worth the long, long run up.
And she works at the Cheesecake Factory in that, and they serve drinks.
Right. My brain is back to normal speed.
Yeah. I figured. But that was a beautiful run, and we got it recorded for posterity. Oh my God. So,
and it was the day that I got tripped up by the tongue twister too.
Yeah.
So, you know, God works in mysterious ways, doesn't he?
And Dave told you.
Or she.
Dave told you the band he booked.
Yeah.
He wouldn't show me the piece of paper, so.
It was wild. Clover.
What? No fucking way.
But I'd already said, Huey can't play harmonica anymore, so I just don't know.
What are the chances?
If they'll sound.
Sure, but we've had dead people play, so I reckon he's going to be able to play.
And they're being headlined by Huey Lewis in the News.
No way.
So he's pulling double shift.
Dave, what the fuck? How's he doing?
And Thin Lizzy with Huey Lewis.
No.
Bluesy Huey Lewis.
Oh, my God. This is too much.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get way more Blue Caracao. People are going to be going crazy.
Jimmy Barnes is playing with Huey Lewis as a support.
Nah, that's crazy.
And also that guy who said, "That's just the way it is." Diddling, diddling, diddling.
Did we explain what the Triptych Club is?
No. It's where you tell them.
Where people who have supported us for three consecutive years are welcomed into the club. It's a special, exclusive, really fun club. As we mentioned, there's a band. There's drinks and food and anything you can possibly imagine. The air hockey is off limits. That's for me. And if Matt is at the door, he lifts up the velvet rope. He welcomes you in. Normally, Dave hypes them up. I then hype Dave up. How are we going to do it this week?
How do you feel? You want to play the Dave role? Or do you want to play the me role?
I'd like to play the you role.
All right, you play the me role. I'll play the Dave role. You play the you role.
Fantastic. Okay. So, first and foremost, are you ready?
Yeah.
You'll be right. From, even if you want to just give him band names this time, I think, because you're really on a roll with that. See how you go. From London, please welcome in Tina.
Tina, I wouldn't turn you around. You come right on in. London, have a grund on. I went for too much nata.
Come right London in.
London in.
Yes. From Bristol, also in Great Britain, I would love to bring in Anna Wang.
Bristol, I will not be charging any Bristols tonight.
Yes.
Anna Wang, Anna come hang.
Yes, isn't that Phil Wang's sister? I believe it is. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you, Anna Wang.
For 3 years of beautiful support, we love you. And finally, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, please welcome in Nathan Swart.
I tell you what, if I had my option of changing you over, Nathan, I never would. Welcome in Nathan Swart.
Thank you, Nathan, Anna, Tina. Welcome into the Triptych Club. Please make yourself at home. But again, do not touch my air hockey table.
Yeah.
I swear to fucking God, Nathan, do not touch it.
The velvet rope is not just at the front door. It's also at the door for the ice hockey table.
Air hockey.
Oh, Oh, no.
Have you ice on it again?
Oh, I didn't realize.
Matt!
I'm like, the ice hockey table's thawed out again.
No, it's air hockey.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my God. You've ruined
I'll scrape it off and make margaritas. What do you think?
Okay. Now I'm back in.
Okay. Anything else we need to tell people before we go?
That they can suggest a topic. Anybody can do it over at, it's on our website, which is Do Go On Pod. There's also a link in the show notes. You can find us on social media at Do Go On Pod across Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, etc. And finally, remember to wash your butt.
Oh, that is such great advice. Thank you so much. I recently smuggled some butter in mine. It's a cross-pod callback that's probably in the future.
It's been a long day.
Okay.
But until next week, I'll say thank you and goodbye.
Laters.
Bye.
Laters. Cursed Mike.